Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to the Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, which for today we could probably rename the Journal Sentinel Giannis Antetokounmpo podcast, because I'm Matt Velasquez. I'm here with Charles Gardner, the beat writer who covers the Milwaukee Bucks. And today we are talking all things Giannis, because that's really been what's dominating, you know, the headlines for most of the season, but especially the past 48 hours, especially when it comes to, you know, the national and NBA conversation. So, you know, Charles, you want to take us through the past, you know, two or three days of all the different different ways that Giannis has cropped up on the national scene?
Yeah, Matt, it's just been a crazy probably 4 days or 6 days, if you go back to New Year's Eve in Chicago, where he had that great game. And of course, it all culminated with that buzzer beating shot last night at MSG, shot against the Knicks, shot heard around the world, literally. One of my great journalist friends I was exchanging emails with even before the game last night, and Antonis, Kalkavouras, who was here a few weeks ago, and he stayed up till 4 a.m. to watch the game in Greece. And I'm sure he wasn't the only one over there watching. So it's really been something, with Giannis hitting his first buzzer beater of his career, and of course it coming on such a great stage at Madison Square Garden. And that will get you a lot of attention when you do it there. And, of course, just the way it all happened, he also setting up his game winner by knocking the ball off Derrick Rose and getting a video review. The officials initially gave the ball to the Knicks, and certainly the Bucks would have had to foul. And Giannis even said in the locker room he thought Rose was expecting a foul, but he tried to see if he could take a swipe at the ball. And the ball went off Rose's thigh and gave the Bucks that final chance. And they were able to steal the game. They really did, after being down 14 to start the fourth quarter. So it was quite a scene. Matt, something really I haven't seen for a long time, if I've seen it, I would say the line of reporters to go in the Bucks locker room after Jason Kidd did his post game, which was crowded. I would say 30 reporters minimum were in a line. It was a line like you see at Starbucks, right? You know, everybody is queuing up to go in the locker room. And amazing. You know, they just kept filing in to the visitors' locker room at MSG.
Now, Charles, for context, tell our listeners – how many reporters usually go into the visiting locker room when you go to a given city?
I would say 3 or 4 or 5. I mean, it depends, of course, where you are. But often, as you know, Matt, sometimes it might be you and me and a couple other reporters in Milwaukee, or especially when I'm on the road and I'm the only writer covering the Bucks from Milwaukee. Sometimes it might just be me. That certainly has happened, going into a visiting locker room. Of course, this was New York, and this was a dramatic buzzer beater, obviously. But it was still an amazing scene to see everybody go over there. And Dan Smicic and Mark Rosenberg were there from the Bucks staff, PR staff, and they did get Giannis out there to speak to all the reporters, including one Greek reporter that called Giannis a Greek god and asked him if he knew he was a Greek god. And Giannis demurred, said he was not.
It sounds like Giannis.
Which provided some entertainment. But it was really an amazing scene, I guess is what I can say. And Greg Monroe telling me in the locker room afterwards that he was ready to, quote, chauffeur, which I spelled wrong in my first tweet, by the way, but he was ready to chauffeur Giannis around New Orleans at the All-Star game, basically saying, hey, that's over with. He's going to be there. And of course, we all know Greg is from New Orleans, and he's offering to show Giannis around the town in mid-February there, kind of serve as the unofficial host for Giannis. And certainly looks, we'll talk about the All-Star voting. The first results came out today. And, of course, Giannis also on Sports Illustrated. So cover, regional cover. So everything has come down, you know, incredibly for Giannis here in the last week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just been, one big moment, moment that's caught the national spotlight or, national attention after the other. And, let's kind of work our way backwards. We could start with today. We're recording this on Thursday, and you mentioned the All-Star game and the initial All-Star votes. The first announcement of those votes has come through, and Giannis checked in seventh among all NBA players. Not just Eastern Conference, not just the front court, but all NBA players. Charles, can you kind of contextualize how big of a development that is and what that means, going forward?
Yeah, well, number three in the East behind LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. And those are big, big names, as we all know. Two of the biggest names in the NBA, playing for the defending champion Cleveland Cavaliers. And what it means, I think, so far, to put it in context, he's in the starting five in the Eastern Conference at this point. Now, there will be another, and he's 250,000 votes ahead of Kevin Love, who's also in the starting five.
Which that's doubling Kevin Love's vote total. It's not just 250,000 ahead, in like some sea of millions of votes. It is double his vote total.
Right. Incredible. So, I think the reality of Giannis being in that starting lineup in New Orleans is it's becoming a reality. There will be another fan vote update next Thursday, and then 2 weeks from tonight, the starters will be named on TNT. They always have a special where they announce the starters, and they make a big production out of it, as we all know. So if Giannis is in that five, there's going to be a lot of talk about him. And remember, the Bucks haven't had an All-Star since 2004, Michael Redd, and not a starter since Sidney Moncrief, in the 1980s, 1986. So it's been a long time. I talked to Marcus Johnson about this for the story I wrote today. And Marcus was a four-time All-Star for the Bucks, as many fans will remember, and twice a starter. And he had a little interesting item saying in 1979, when he was a starter, the first time he actually replaced Dr. J in the lineup. So what an honor that was to be voted in, he said, over his idol, Dr. J. But he definitely, in talking to Marcus before the game last night, this was before the game, of course, he said that Giannis is putting the fear in opposing players. Players are taking notice of him in a big way. And we saw that on the dunk that Giannis started from near the free throw line. Was oohing and aahing. That was a few minutes from the finish, where he took off with a one-handed hammer dunk, took off from the elbow. So there have been some amazing things. But I think the main point, Matt, it certainly looks like Giannis will be starting. And of course, we figured that he was going to be an all-star. Maybe a month or two ago, I didn't. I think you were the one who said you thought he would be. And he certainly has fulfilled that promise. The other thing that's interesting is Jabari Parker was 10th in the front court voting. And Giannis went out of his way yesterday to say he hoped Parker would be in the All-Star game with him. And Jason Kidd, Coach Kidd, also said, you know, he's really hoped that both players could make it. And, of course, Parker's only chance would be likely to be picked as a reserve by the conference coaches. But that may be a long shot. But the fact is he's put himself in that conversation, too, which is great for the franchise and certainly put himself in a position to where he's being considered. And I think that shows the progress of both of these young players.
Yeah, and speaking of the progress of these two young players, some breaking news that I'm just seeing right now, the Bucks game on January 18th against Houston is now going to be on ESPN. So, yeah,
and I believe it, Matt. I hadn't seen that yet. And
four minutes ago on Twitter, so I can't blame you.
Yeah, but you know, this is going to keep happening. I was thinking about that last night, that you know how they change games according to who's hot. And we've seen the Bucks on the other end of this getting their games knocked off, correct?
So,
you know, last year and a few years ago, oh, they're not doing well enough. We're going to take them off. Now they're going to be the one at it. Now there you've got Harden, the MVP favorite right now, and Giannis. That's certainly a game that the networks want to put on the air. I'm not surprised in the least.
Yeah, you can sell that. That's pretty easy to sell.
Yeah, indeed.
And so kind of getting back on track, so, you know, and it's important to remember that, you know, Giannis could win, you know, have all these votes, you know, every time they give these updates for the All-Star game. These are fan vote updates. And this year, the fan vote isn't 100%
correct.
What decides the starter. So, you know, Charles, do you think that the media panel and the players would still, you know, they're not going to vote him out. They're not going to be so overwhelmingly against Giannis. I mean, it seems like a shoe-in. He's going to start.
Yes, that's why I say, as you said, Matt, now that this is a revised format this year, and 25% of the vote will be from a 75-member media panel, 25% from the players. And that voting is slated to take place next week. That hasn't taken place yet. The players have not voted. And so you're kind of guessing, but my guess is certainly the media is going to give Giannis a strong support because they see what his numbers are. They see that he's eclipsed some of the favorites maybe in the past, Carmelo Anthony, Paul George. They're not having the season that Giannis is having. So I think he's going to be solid there. And you've got to think the players also have taken notice and are going to vote for him. I asked John Henson about it, and he said, well, I'll just wear a T-shirt that says, you know, Giannis for All-Star. But certainly the players take notice of the fan voting too. But this was done to make it so that wasn't all on the fan voting. You notice today our former Bucks center, Zaza Pachulia, still high in the running there in the Western Conference. And this is one of the reasons they changed the system, because that happened when he was with Dallas last year, too. He has a lot of global support out there, the Big Z. And
And now you put him on the Warriors.
He's coming off the bench for the Warriors. We all love Z, but we know that. So I think this was one of the reasons this new rule, this revised format, was put in this year. And it'll remain to be seen, you know, does it do the job? Does it make a fair? There's always someone who's going to get left off who's deserving. We all know how that works. Marcus Johnson said to me yesterday one thing. He said he would like to see the All-Star rosters expanded to 15. He said it really would be nice if let some other players get get honored, and I don't think it would dilute the product. I think I'm on board with him on that.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, Zaza too. He has that global support, much like Giannis does. You know, Z also has, you know, he's on the Warriors. Fans of the Warriors might just vote for all five guys on the team, which isn't crazy anyway.
Right.
But then, yeah, I actually was telling my wife when I got home from work today, I was like, you know, how many votes would Giannis have gotten? How many more votes would he get if people who are tweeting their votes, you know, I'm sure some of them misspelled his name. Like, I'm sure nobody's spelling Antetokounmpo correctly every time. So,
well, yes, that is interesting that they said they're making some allowances for that because it's so hard to spell. I saw that on Rachel Nichols had a tweet today about that, and I thought that was funny. But so there are some allowances. I don't think you have to have it spelled absolutely perfect for the vote to count. I think Rachel joked about it, and she said if that happened, he couldn't make the team. But
yeah. that was my thought, you know.
I always say M before N. Every writer that asks me about it, I say, you know, just remember Antetokounmpo, and the M comes before the N. That's how I do it. Now that doesn't mean that's fail, you know, that's fireproof, but that's the way I try to remember.
Yeah, for sure. So now we talked about the All-Star game. Let's kind of look back at that next game you were talking about. Obviously, we talked about that a little bit earlier. But one aspect of it that, you know, has been getting some attention has been the last 2 minute report and how, you know, the NBA says, oh, well, technically Giannis should have been called for a 5 second back to the basket. You know, what's your kind of take about about that situation and the 2 minute reports as a whole? Cause I know that they've come under fire from the likes of LeBron and KD.
Yeah, no doubt. We remember that Christmas Day game where the report came out the next day too and said there should have been a foul on Richard Jefferson on the last play of the game when Durant slipped. And of course that was a 1 point game just in the same way the Bucks-Knicks was last night. I think my take on it is, you know, it's good to know these things, I guess, but I tend to agree with the players a bit that it kind of takes away from you know, you don't want to take away from the result. It's not going to change the result. The Bucks won. The Cavaliers won that game on Christmas Day, and that is not going to change. I like the transparency of the officials being accountable in the last 2 minutes, but I agree with Frank Isola. I talked to Frank last night after the game. We had a chat and who covers the Knicks for the Daily News, covers the NBA's on Sirius XM, has a great show in the morning. And I see he tweeted today. He was like, hey, you know, there were 100 things that could have gone different there. You know, you got to move on. In the report, they also said Carmelo Anthony committed a 3 second defensive 3 second violation just before Giannis's 5 second violation, or what they're saying in the last 2 minute report. So I think, you know, they get down to the nitty gritty. Yes. But I guess my point on this is, Matt, they're not going to call a 5 second violation at the end of a game when it's coming down to the last shot that would by 6/10 of a second. You know, you would just be like stopping the entire game and the entire drama of the game by doing that. And what if you were wrong on that? You know, you would have a riot. You would have had a riot off the Bucks bench. I mean, it's not realistic, I guess, is what I want to say. It wouldn't have been realistic to flag Melo for the defensive 3 second at that juncture either and give the Bucks a free throw where they could have tied the game. That the Knicks, you know, would have cried foul on that because Giannis could have missed the shot easily and then the Knicks win. So I think, you know, it goes both ways, and I think the game was officiated fine in those last seconds, and I see, but you're getting pretty nitpicky there. I mean, in a way, sometimes that's good, but you certainly don't want to rob the game of its drama for what could be a questionable decision.
Yeah, and it's not like he backed him down for like 8 seconds or 10 seconds, and no. It was just like an obvious thing. No. You got to call. We're talking about 0.6 of a second, you know, a human watching that in real time. You know, it's just not. It doesn't get called very much as it is. You know, let alone crunch time.
2 seconds before the final buzzer on something like that. I don't think I've ever seen that. Like you said, if it was 7, 8 seconds, a guy who's pounding, that might be different. But obviously the Bucks were going to the final shot. He had to make a decision, and he chose to take the shot. So, but bottom line is it doesn't change the result.
Yeah. And, you know, so it doesn't change it. It's fine. You know, no one's going to remember this like a week from now. It's not a big deal. And, right. So what they will remember is that Giannis was on the cover of a regional cover of Sports Illustrated and a story that went online on the 3rd, the story that'll hit newsstands on the 9th, you know, and Bucks fans especially, they've already read it by the 9th because they were all over it on the 3rd. And, you know, so he's in that story, and then the next day goes and plays at Madison Square Garden, hits a game-winning shot, just like a total convergence of a lot of great things happening. But I wanted to talk to you, Charles, about the story itself by Lee Jenkins, which was a lot of great reporting, you know, a lot of great anecdotes in there. Some stuff we already knew, you know, you and I, from being around Giannis and being around the Bucks and being around, you know, the area and kind of knowing teammates and stories and things like that. You know, but what if anything stood out to you about that story, or is there anything that you learned that you didn't know at the time when you read it?
Yeah, I thought it was very well done. Lee is just a terrific writer, and the thing I really liked, and the one incredibly interesting item from the summer was, you know, we knew Giannis was had been working out with the coaches, and Sean Sweeney had taken a real pivotal role in helping him make this transformation to the point guard spot. But great story in there about how Giannis practiced out in California, and they would just take normal people who were out on the beach or wherever they were practicing, and he said it was at Long Beach State, if I recall right. But they would just have them run the fast break with Giannis. And he had to know where they were, and he had to know, and he had to, and Coach Kidd was quoted in there, said, well, it was great because he had to communicate. They were total strangers. So he had to tell them, hey, this is where you got to be on the break. You got to be here. Can you imagine those people out there, you know, running the break with Giannis? We should try to find some of those people. I mean, I thought that was fascinating, a great anecdote. The other one I liked was Giannis saying that, or finding out that he goes to the Omega. I used to go to the Omega and get a little sandwich over there. And that's not too far from the Bucks practice session. I told him last night, I said, hey, I like the Omega too. So, you know, but there were some fun stuff in there. And I think that was one that struck me. And any that struck you differently, Matt?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think his self-awareness really showed, and I think we've known him to be a pretty self-aware guy. You know, even when he was, you know, 18 and just getting here and wasn't as good at communicating as he is now, I think he was always pretty self-aware and always kind of knew who he was and what he was all about and where he wanted to go and what he wanted to do. And, you know, you see that when he says things like, I have a franchise on my shoulders. Like, right. You know, he knows that, and he doesn't say it. I mean, I read it, I absolutely didn't hear him say it, but he doesn't say it, or I don't think he intends it, in a way of saying, like, you know, I'm the guy. Like, I have to do this. I'm in charge. Like, I'm the best. Like, anything like that. He's just saying, no, like, I'm a great player, and, you know, they believe in me, and they want me to be, you know, a leader and a star in this team, and it's my responsibility to this team, this organization, to this city, you know, which very often in the story it comes through that he really cares about Milwaukee, he really wants to be in Milwaukee, you know, and he appreciates, you know, not just the Bucks but the city of Milwaukee, which is which is something that I'm sure resonated in a very strong, positive way with Bucks fans, because for so often, the rap with Milwaukee, at least, especially, you know, that I've heard as somebody who's not from here, is, you know, guys don't want to go to Milwaukee. It's not a destination. It's not a place for free agents. It's not a good enough city compared to other places. Yeah. And I think that resonates with fans a lot.
Yeah, it was interesting. Somebody asked Giannis last night if it would have been different if he had played in a bigger market in L.A. or in New York. You know, and I kind of laughed when I heard that question, because you always hear that question in the big markets. Okay, so he's in New York, so everybody wants to know, well, not everybody, but this reporter wanted to know how it would have been different, or, you know, would he have done, kind of the inferences, could he have done better in a bigger market? And Giannis just basically, his answer was, hey, I don't think it'd be any different wherever I'm going to work the same way. I'm going to do the same things. I want to be a great player. So that was kind of interesting. But that comes out in Lee Jenkins' story, how he would drive back to the Cousins Center after a bad game. And, you know, you and I have seen him there countless hours working, right, after practice, before practice. So we know that that's all part of what he's done.
Well, it's not just that he was working in the early years or he needed extra work as a rookie. He's pretty much the same guy now. I mean, you know, Jason Terry told us preseason that he prides himself as a veteran on being the first guy there, and he said, I can't beat him. I can't beat Giannis to the court.
Right. No, right, exactly right. And, I mean, it was an interesting post game last night. John Schumann, you know, who writes very analytically and sat next to me up in the press area last night. He wrote a good story today about Giannis feeling more comfortable in the post. And Giannis had some very good answers about that, saying, yes, you know, I practiced that. I've worked, because that was the winning shot. He backed down with his back to the basket and turned over Lance Thomas and scored. And that's not, as we all know, that's not maybe an absolute natural move. That was something Giannis has practiced. He's worked on with the coaches. And he said, now I'm comfortable doing it. He said, I really didn't think about it. I just turned and did it. But that comes from all the practice he's put in. And it shows how he's diversified his game. And that was very interesting, you know, some interesting comments that came after the game from Giannis about that.
Yeah, and I mean, and you know, of course there were other little things in the story, like, you know, how he had to look up Jason Kidd's career, and who does he think he is, you know, telling me I wasn't good enough as a point guard or whatever, or benching me for a game, and he looks, he goes, oh wow, yeah. I should shut up, you know, and then, you know, him moving his brother into college.
Right, there were some good anecdotes. Well, one of my reporter friends in New York mentioned to Kidd the other day, he said, I'm not sure I believe that one. The one about he didn't know who Jason was. He said, you know, he said, I mean, they got the internet over there. So I don't know, but you know, so that, who knows? We'd have to talk to Giannis about that some more, but he probably didn't know the full extent of Jason's resume. I'm sure he knew some things about it. But Jason kind of laughed about that. He said, well, he listened. That was the big thing.
Yeah.
He didn't care as long as he listened. Yeah.
That sounds like Jason Kidd to me, you know, and so, you know, obviously, you know, and then there was the Bucks are making a big thing, which is worthy of being a big thing, about how, you know, a bunch of Greek fans at the game last night. Could you hear, like, a pretty big section of Greek fans? Because Giannis spent time after the game, you know, got off the bus and signed autographs and stuff. How big was the presence there in New York? Because I know that New York has a sizable Greek population.
Yeah, and after the game, they were chanting, you know, his name after a lot of folks had left. I could hear them a little bit as I was finishing up my early story and getting ready to head downstairs. But the Garden is a huge, you know, 20,000. So I didn't really hear them so much during the game. You could hear a little bit. But one thing I will say, Matt, there were Bucks fans at the Garden. right up behind me, and maybe that was part of the Greek contingent. They were cheering for Jabari. They were cheering every play that the Bucks were making during that comeback in the fourth quarter. So, and I think that's New York. I mean, you know, if the Lakers are there, they're going to be Laker fans. But I guess that's saying something for Giannis, international appeal, and certainly, you know, there were several reporters from Greece at the game and in the locker room afterwards. And so you go to New York, it's always a crowd, really, you know, reporters from everywhere. And that was certainly the case last night, and the fans as well. And Giannis was asked if he hears that, or he said, does that make a difference? And his comment was that he definitely does hear the fans. He sees the Greek flags in the stands. We've seen that at other venues as well. I saw it in Washington, the two games the Bucks played in D.C. here in the last month. There were some fans as well with Greek flags. And he definitely does see it, and he's very grateful for that.
Yeah, I've definitely seen them around, that's for sure. I'm pretty sure I saw one in Philly a couple of years ago when one of the games I covered out there. I don't think I saw one last year when I was in Boston for that game against the Celtics, even though that was the game where he made like four threes in the first quarter or something like that. I don't remember that. But, you know, okay, so that was on the 3rd that Sports Illustrated story came out. And like I said before, most Bucks fans will probably have read that at this point. But if you somehow haven't read it, go on to Sports Illustrated's website and give it a read. It's a good story, regardless of if you're a Bucks fan or not, really. But then, so the day before that was another, you know, marquee kind of Giannis moment, because the Bucks hosted the Thunder, and it was billed as, you know, Giannis versus Russ. It was Russell Westbrook, Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, going head-to-head. Two guys who've been putting up a bunch of triple-doubles, and, you know, I wasn't there. I was just coming back from Marquette's game against Seton Hall, but Charles, you were there, and is it fair to say it lived up to the hype?
Oh, I think so. Giannis had 26 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. I'm looking at the box score here. I pulled it out. And, you know, played very well in the close game. We know he made the winning assist to John Henson after twice being denied at the rim with the score tied, I believe. One time the Bucks were up 2, and then the other time the score was tied. He said, I realized I had to do something different. And he penetrated and then dished to Henson, who got the game winner, and or eventual game winner, because Russell Westbrook turned the ball over thanks to some savvy defense from Tony Snell. So in both of these last two games, Matt, that's interesting. The Bucks win both games after, you know, forcing turnovers with their defense. First, Snell swiping the ball away from Westbrook. It went off his leg and out of bounds. And then almost the same thing Wednesday night, where Giannis swiped at it and it went off the thigh of Derrick Rose and out of bounds. And so those are big defensive plays. Westbrook had 30 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, did not get a triple-double, was 10 for 11 at the free throw line, 2 for 10 from 3-point range, which the Bucks did a very good job just to keep him on the perimeter instead of driving in and getting his easy layups and dunks.
Yeah,
and
let him shoot those all day, all day. Just let him shoot.
That's right. And he was 2 for 10. He was 9 for 28, and I think it was Henson who said after the game, okay, you know, 30 points, but on 28 shots, we'll take that. And indeed, you know, it wound up being a victory for the Bucks. I think what I saw from that, Matt, is how the Thunder is a good team. Victor Oladipo had a nice game. He's back from injury. But they are so reliant on Westbrook, as we knew or thought they might be after Durant left to go to Golden State. And you just wonder how he's going to hold up over 82 games. I know he has incredible energy. I know he plays. He played 36 minutes that night. I know he's in the MVP race with James Harden. But you just wonder, isn't that going to take a toll on him at the end of the season, at the end of games? You know, it's not to say he won't win games. He will, and he has already. But, you know, you have to score that one for the Bucks. And so that was Giannis playing 41 minutes himself that night. And the Bucks getting a big win. And I think what was important in that game, Matt, was they had had such a big game New Year's Eve in Chicago, and then to come home, they didn't want to give that home game away. And remember, they trailed early to the Thunder by 15 points, and then last night trailed by 14 entering the fourth quarter. So those are good signs that there's a team that is not giving up. That, and I remember Giannis said after the Oklahoma City game, he said, well, we got down early, but we didn't let that rattle us. And, they were able to get back in the game, you know, by halftime to be, I think, within six. And, then they had a big third quarter and they were able to, win the game at the finish.
Yeah. You mentioned that Bulls game and, you know, obviously Giannis had 35 points that game, pretty stellar night and a 20-point win. But I think we have to break from Giannis for a second and talk about Malcolm Brogdon, because he put together a triple double, which for a second round pick in his rookie season to get a triple double is, you know, almost unprecedented.
Well, it was his second start, and we know Matthew Dellavedova has been out with a strained right hamstring. He hurt his hamstring in the Detroit game last week. And, the Bucks are, I believe, 3-1 now. Since Delly went out. And of course, Brogdon having the triple double in his second start was really sensational. And, the way he did it as the Bucks, you know, pulled away in the fourth quarter there. And, you know, his teammates were also happy for him. Jason Kidd, very happy, for the way he responded. And, you know, it was interesting. He said he didn't know that, you know, it was late in the game and he was still one assist shy. And he threw the ball to Giannis, which seemed automatic, but Giannis got fouled. He didn't convert the shot. And there were, it was inside 2 minutes, and so you thought, oh boy, I hope he gets that last assist. And he said he didn't know about it until his teammates told him that, and he said then, he said, I was hunting that assist. So you gotta love Malcolm. He said, I was hunting it then. Once I found out, I was hunting that down. He didn't want to leave the United Center without it. And you know, Jason said it came naturally, and it did. I think he found Greg Monroe for the basket that gave him 10, and then he actually got two more assists. He wound up with 12 assists, I think. So it was a real feel good moment for the Bucks, and they were also happy that his teammates for him, and you know, everybody in the locker room very happy for him. He got doused, I think, as you said, Matt. And by the time we got in the locker room, you couldn't even really tell. But
that's probably because Jabari Parker did such a good job of cleaning up the mess.
I guess so. Somebody did. But and everybody, of course, very happy for him. But he's done a terrific job, and you know, we'll see when Delly comes back. He was on the trip to New York, but still no update as to exactly when he may be coming back. The hamstring and still being called day to day. So we'll see when he's able to return. But you got to think now they'll just be that much stronger with the experience Brogdon has gained in the past few games with playing more minutes.
I mean, I think it'd be pretty fair to say at this point, you know, regardless of what happens, I mean, well, obviously you have to include it, but at this point right now, I think it's fair to say that Malcolm Brogdon was the steal of the draft. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I think so. You know, there may be somebody emerge later, but at this point, you know, Jason Terry had the interesting comment the other night when I talked to him about Brogdon. I think it was after the game in Chicago, and he said, well, you know, this guy should be the rookie of the year. Joel Embiid was drafted 2 years ago. And of course, Joel did not play because of the foot surgeries and is very likely to be the rookie of the year. But in a lot of the rankings that the national writers do, Malcolm is ranked second on Scott Howard Cooper's rookie ladder on ESPN or on NBA.com. I'm sorry, on NBA.com. He has Malcolm as a second-ranked rookie, and those are the rookie rankings that are well-respected. So I think that's amazing when you think he's the 36th overall pick. And he's up there in all the categories, leads the rookies in three-point percentage. He's up there in assists and steals. And just, you know, Jason Kidd pointed out last night, he said, you know, a big play at the end of the game was he had Brogdon inbounding the ball for that last play. And sometimes not that easy to get the ball in. We saw what happened to Derrick Rose after he got the ball just moments before. So he was able to get the ball into Giannis and you know, at least set the Bucks up for that final play, which was also important. But yeah, he at number 36, he has been just a revelation, no question about it.
And I guess we can probably transition from talking about Brogdon and other Bucks besides Giannis into, you know, obviously that Giannis has been such a focus of this podcast so far. You know, going forward, what are two or three other players or storylines that you're looking at when it comes to the Bucks as a team? Because right now they're 18-16, they're sixth in the East. You know, they're facing three home games and out of their next four, coming up with a trip to San Antonio mixed in there. And all three of those home games are very much winnable, coming against the Knicks, the Wizards, and the Heat, which have started their tankapalooza for this year, it seems like.
Yes, and very unfortunately for them, Matt Justice Winslow out for the season.
Right.
One of the writers last night said to me that they had – I forget, five or six, maybe it was more, players out for a game the other night, and they were all their best players. It was like Dragic, Whiteside, you know, you just go on down the list, and it was basically the best players the Heat had, and none of them, Winslow, you know, none of them were available for the game. So,
yeah. Yes. So with that schedule coming up, and what do you think? What players or storylines are you looking at for the next week or two ahead?
Well, I think one thing we'll watch and we'll talk about probably the next time we get together is Greg Monroe's just been playing tremendous basketball. And last night, I think he had an incredible line of his own, which probably would have got more attention except for the drama at the end. 18 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, 31 minutes. And he was a big part of that. He and Brogdon keyed, and Jason Terry actually, keyed the fourth quarter surge after the Bucks had gone down 14. They struck right back at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and he was a huge part of that. So I just think the way he's played, remember there were so many concerns. He was going to get traded in the offseason, everybody thought. He didn't fit, this and that. And all of a sudden this year, he fits like a glove, or he's become one of the true leaders of this team, even though he's coming off the bench. But again, that's been a strong point for the Bucks, the bench, where it was just a non-factor last year. So I think Greg is something to watch. I think also the Teletovich and Michael Beasley, you know, Jason Kidd likes to pick his spots with them, sometimes use them opposite each other. He's toyed with playing them together off the bench a couple times. Teletovich had 13 points last night and was, you know, also had a big role in the Bucks victory. And so I think, you know, we can talk about the bench. And also one of the guys who has played more in the absence of Dellavedova has been Jason Terry. And he said an interesting thing to me last night after the game. We were talking about Giannis. We talked about some other things. He said, you know, I really haven't been shooting well. He said, I haven't hit my stride. I haven't. He's been frustrated that he's not been productive in some games. And, of course, Kidd has a lot of faith in him, played with him in Dallas on that 2011 championship team. And then really probably where the game turned around Wednesday night was the two threes he hit early in the fourth quarter. All of a sudden he knocks down two threes, and that 14-point lead that the Knicks had didn't look, you know, quickly went down. So he thinks he can bring that. And we'll see if he can start doing that on a more consistent basis. So there are a lot of good storylines for this team coming up, Matt, and we'll just keep following them. You know, obviously Jabari has been tremendous. He had 19 against Oklahoma City. He had 15 last night. You know, it was interesting that Marcus Johnson in our conversation last night said that, hey, Jabari and Giannis are figuring it out, how to get their points, where to go, and that you can almost count on them. You can, you know, it's not that you're going to get 5 points one night from Jabari and 35 the next. It's going to be more consistent, and that's really something that's big for the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you mentioned Monroe. I think it's been something that we've mentioned multiple times over the course of the season, just the level of energy and hustle, especially at the defensive end, has been just off the charts when you compare it to last season. And he's definitely kicked his level of intensity up a notch, which has been huge because, you know, the Bucks need him to be the best version of himself if they're going to succeed as a team, because, you know, they just need that type of low post production and another scoring option, especially with Chris Middleton being out.
Yeah, and he's really worked well with Brogdon. They play well off each other. That continued again last night in New York, where they look for each other. They play off each other so well. And, you know, I'm sure that Coach Kidd is going to want to continue that tandem, you know, as much as possible. Even with Brogdon starting now, he's tried to keep that duo in the game for long stretches. And in Minnesota, that first night when they lost to the Timberwolves, that really didn't happen. The Bucks didn't play well anyway, but that they kind of lost that connection that those guys had off the bench when Brogdon started for the first game. But that has been reconnected, I guess you would say. That's back in connection and saw it last night. So, Greg, yeah, I just think he's engaged. I think last night when I was talking to him, you could tell this is what I think he expected when he signed with the Bucks. This was the kind of, you know, it really didn't happen last year. The team was young. We all know the reasons. There are different reasons. Things didn't work out so well for him. But I think this is what he thought. And the irony of it is it's happening without Chris Middleton, his buddy, you know, from his Detroit days. It's without Chris in the lineup and being injured. But hey, when Chris comes back, it might even be better for the Bucks. And, you know, we still don't know when that's going to happen, but Chris was on the trip. And I noticed that Chris was, if you look at those pictures, Matt, of the celebration midcourt, Chris is out there, Thon Maker, you know, everybody went flying out there when Giannis hit that shot.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to go back and watch the video and see how fast Middleton was moving. And
yeah, you can see how fast he went.
Break down his gait, see if we can get some doctors in here and figure out how he's doing. And, you know, we'll see. You wrote a big story about Chris recently that we haven't discussed in podcast form, but he might only be a little bit over a month away from coming back if all things go well.
Right. I mean, he said his goal was the All-Star break or thereabouts. And of course, the Bucks are being very cautious, extremely cautious, not putting out a timetable, but that's the mode that they always take. And you can understand that in some ways because they don't want to have a setback. And you know, that's always possible in something like this. Hamstring is a very tough injury. And his was even tougher to have surgery and have such a devastating injury before the preseason even started. But he's been making strong progress. I know the trainers have been working with him. He's staying engaged with the team. And it'll be real interesting to see how many games when he comes back, how many he can play and what kind of impact he can have as the Bucks end the season. And, you know, now it's starting to look, Matt, that it could be a playoff season, right? We didn't know. We didn't know where this was going to be. There's still a lot of time left. We're not to the halfway point yet, 34 games, but we're nearing the halfway point. And so we're going to be able to it's just the race is still so close. You got Indiana, Chicago, everybody, even the Knicks on a 6-game losing streak at 16-19. They almost pulled that game out last night. They have another shot at the Bucks on Friday. They're trying to get themselves straightened out. So there's a lot of season to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will be with you throughout that season here at the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. You know, we're hoping that now that the holidays are done, that we can kind of hit a stride and be a little more consistent with getting our podcasts out. So we appreciate you, everyone, sticking with us during our little hiatus there. And we look forward to having you back for future versions of the podcast that come out. As always, you can get our podcast by going to jsonline.com/bucks. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher and Audio Boom. And you can also find us on the Journal Sentinel Bucks app, all of which are available wherever you get apps. And, you know, thank you all for following along, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.